call me a gorilla filmmaker. I remember like the first camera that came out that we could actually afford to us. My mom was with the video in video man was a collective like a
Viva. Video and video.
Yeah. Oh, back in the day, there was a program called Finesse, which was for station access program, that was kind of nurtured through video. And it was a video collective, but we were able to get Grant's woman on and C-Spice was part of that group. And then they developed Image, which is a digital Grant's group. And then they were got Grant's to do training and have booths like buy a camera, have the first like, you know, Final Cut Pro, because my mom was part of that. I was able to like snag her camera and then take it to like the operations and the blogs. And so the stories were told at that point. We were 100% reliant on mass media capturing, you know, the events and stuff like that. Or else, you know, word of the mouth and telling people about it. Because I remember when Katastrophe happened, it wasn't until 2 years later when Annalisa Boxelman finally came up with Katastrophe's existence. That I found out actually happened. And then I would just edit some videos and put out some stuff about the different resistance and grassroots, you know, stuff that happened and make these videos. That became my thing. And then now I was talking to Lena there. So if you put the cameras down, if you're still doing videos, like, nah, everyone's been doing video, like videos on YouTube. Right? Okay. Can't even, I have too much time. I was in it because it was a need. There was a need for it, wasn't so I could be as a filmmaker. The story was more important than my actual skills. Because then I watch them now, I'm like, oh my god, how embarrassing. It's like, it's almost like a tutorial for Final Cut Pro and all video effects transition. And I go, oh, and then they go, slide. Oh, now the Matrix.
So cool when I first did. Actually, that's a good transition point. So, like, the process of decolonization.
Well, just finding out what is colonization. Like, that word itself was kind of boring. And then you're talking about, I was born from the movement. My mom actually met my dad in prison. He was an organizer for the Native Brotherhood. And she was part of the Native Alliance for Red Power. And they went in to visit a prison. She fell in love with my dad. And then I came out of that union. So I mean, like, literally was a child of this movement that happened in the early 70s. And so I was always taught at home, you know, be proud, and proud of who you are. But everything was contradictory to what I was told at home. And, you know, there was a lot of, you know, hypocrisy that I was, you know, seeing in my life about, you know, one way we're trying to be proud at the same time feeling like, you know, just going to public school and just trying to fit in and being confused, like, why, not really understanding where we were at, kind of not really liking being a Native person, you know, and just like most people that internalize, you know, racism. Because I'm fair skinned, I know that I can, as opposed to my sisters who were darker skinned, have different experiences with it. And I was able to not get the physical brunt, but I've heard a lot from my friends. Like, no offense, but I got all that growing up, without feeling the confidence to say no, I'm offended. And so it wasn't until later in life when I came to Vancouver. I had my first son, who was a single mother, and I went into my younger siblings who were involved in the movement in Vancouver, and I was first coming out, and there was a lot of exciting things happening politically around the BC Treaty process when the first propaganda was coming out with the NDP, and it was like gathering and walking side by side. And super young people started at that time I was, you know, I gotta get a job and that's really great, you know, which is true, but I'm a mother, so I gotta get work, I gotta pay rent, and you know, I have to be mature and all that, but you know, whatever. And when I walked into a BC Treaty Commission's occupations that my family were involved in, and they started with the Native Inuit, and I had joined later. And then I learned about the Treaty Commission, and then that's when I first heard the word colonization. It's like my brother started talking to me about that. You know, how this history that I started going outside the box and started learning about this history and about this process of colonization, which led me to understand and fully accept why I was where I was at that time, because I was supposed to be there. You can say that at the time I was a single mother, I was on welfare, I was undereducated, I was. So you take all of those. That stigma or that as a statistic, like I'm, you know, depending whether I could have ended down downtown east side, just you know, so easily. And there's nothing that makes me any different than any of the women that work with me, you know, like, but it just right there I woke up and I just was like, huh, this process, this is a really, really intricate process that happened. You start finding out, you know, more about the residential school, then you go back and then you find out about, you know, the gunboats and then the treaties that were signed and all this history of this, of what led us to where we are, confused, dislocated, dispossessed,
addicted,
unhappy, you know, depressed, you know, trying to fight in this, you know, in this world to get a job and, you know, that you have all the things stacked against you and you're not meant to rise so far, you know. And it just kind of worked out. And then it just was so empowering to me, just like, you know, having that knowledge of this of colonization. Now, the words came up was about decolonization, which is, you know, the opposite of that process. And I think you have to go through this form of decolonization. It's the opposite of the process. Because the first process of colonization is a physical process where they literally kill you, they literally take you physically off your land, you're, you know, poisoned, you're, you know, diseased, and they remove you physically. And then there's all these other processes that happen, and then they take you from there, they change your name, they put acts on you, they take your children, they take the language, they take your sense of identity. A process, but not a destination. Like, because it was like, you can't be like, I'm decolonized now. I'm like, I'm decolonized. Because like, it's not a really destination. And so, as my partner and I, we were thinking, like, as somewhere where we want to be, like, re-indigenized. As in, like, reconnect to land, reconnect to language, reconnect with family, with our ecosystem as we're part of it, and then, you know, find ourselves in how we can actually live as human beings and we're supposed to live. And that's part of it, in this man-made kind of world that we set ourselves out, once we step outside there, and people to go right in the wild. It's so new. It's wild. And right now it's my family. We occupied some traditional territory. We went outside to preserve our boundaries. We didn't ask the Indian Outbound Councilors or anything. We didn't apply for anybody. And we just started to go back into land and reconnect to them to learn about more indigenous food systems and how to, like, take care of ourselves and what kinds of foods are in the season. And